Welcome to Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. This is David Wilk, your host, and I'm with Arthur Phillips, the author of The Song Is You, his newest novel. This is part two of our interview. The reason that we're continuing is that there are other things that hopefully we can talk about that will be interesting. I wanted to ask you some questions about, because this book is about music in this portable format, it kind of introduces the notion of how culture is changed by technology. And of course, writing now is being influenced and altered by technology as well. And I wondered, you know, maybe it may be completely random and you may not have any interest in this subject, but I wanted to find out if you feel that there is a corollary between the portability of music and the way books are presented, the way authors write. Does the technology change the way you think about writing a book, for example?
I don't think so. I think when it comes down to making music or making a story or making a picture, I think probably things don't change that much, I'm guessing. You may have an electronic instrument. You may be able to send files to your collaborator across town or across the globe. You may be able to process words on a screen away from home. But putting words together, putting notes together, putting paint on something, I think probably is very unchanged despite technology. And that it's when things come down to getting it to people and putting it in their hands or in front of their eyes and then getting paid for that, that we have all kinds of fascinating and or terrifying issues at play.
Well, and I guess that just on a practical level, are you able to make a living as a novelist?
I am. I'm extremely lucky. I'm one of those people who has been able to make a living as a novelist.
Yeah, it's fairly rare, I think.
It is rare, and I think it's probably going to get rarer.
I think that's true.
And I hope it doesn't get any rarer until I'm done.
So do you do much on my mind.
Yeah.
Do you teach at all?
I don't know.
That's a nice thing.
I'm very happy with the way things have sorted out for me so far. I don't know that it'll last, but I'm happy so far.
And you work at home, I presume.
I generally don't. I don't get a lot done at home. I've always written in cafes. Yeah. I've been very happy in cafes.
So you don't have an office. You don't have. It's not like you rent an office or go to the library.
I go to the cafe every day.
Really?
And they know me and they bring me my hot drinks.
That is fantastic.
It's a good life.
So you write on a laptop?
I start on notebooks and pencils and pens and all that, and then go into a laptop and print it out and all the right back and forth. So.
And how about, again, this is sort of mundane, but do you write and the whole thing and then revise, or do you write and revise along the way?
Yeah, it depends on the day. Sometimes you feel like writing, sometimes you feel like revising, sometimes you feel like outlining, sometimes you feel like ignoring your outline. I early on was lucky enough to realize the only rules that matter are that there is no rule that matters.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's, you know, some people are, I mean, everybody has their own way of doing it.
Yep, exactly. And the more you look into other people's ways, the more you find out it doesn't matter. You'll find,
right.
And it won't last forever. The thing that used to work for you suddenly doesn't, so you got to start again. And it's a great, wonderful freedom.
And do you, I guess this, again, these are sort of technical questions, but do you see each novel as you've written a world or, you know, written a story, and then it's closed, chapter closed, you move on to the next? Or have you ever felt interested in exploring further the characters or the locale or the ideas of any of the books that you've written?
Huh. You know, there's one exception to what I'm going to say, and the exception is that there's a minor character in my first novel, Prague, who I then later used in a short story and have since bandied around the idea of a novel based around him, but he's a very minor character. Except for that, it's not by any policy or philosophy. It's simply by what has happened, which is that I've had an idea for a story which has been different than the previous books.
And they seem to be very different
from
each other.
And so then I proceed on to the idea that's captivated me, and it turns out it's a different book again, and that's the way it's gone. But I don't have any, there's no logic to that or reason for it. It's just following one's inspiration through the gardens as they come. So.
Well, and it seems like you're able to travel in different realms and worlds, so why not?
Yeah.
And of course what was I going to ask you? I was going to ask you, I know what I wanted to ask you about this. I did, as I was reading the book, you know, consciously thinking about music embedded throughout, I wanted to ask you about the lyrics that you wrote. Mm-hmm. Those are all original lyrics. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're pretty good. You can write songs.
Thanks.
I would imagine. Has anybody asked you about that?
Well, you know, we started very ambitiously. I've got a couple of buddies who have good bands, and we started very ambitiously, like the audiobook. I consider recording some of this stuff and coming up with music.
Like creating a band.
Creating a band.
It could be the Cato Dwyer band.
Exactly.
That would be a pretty cool way.
That would be very cool.
Do it.
And it hasn't happened.
And it's hard.
Then writing another book. Right. And he's making another album and suddenly, you know, things fall away.
Well, do you hang out with musicians on purpose or does this just happen?
I've got a couple of buddies who are, one friend for years and years, going back 20 some years, who's been very successful. So we're just friends. And as it turns out, I'm hanging out with a musician.
The better way of doing it than the way that your character does. I mean,
exactly.
I thought about that a lot, that, you know, you don't want to be a stalker in real life.
Right.
And the opportunity to talk to people, and you chronicle this, I thought, again, this was something very real to me, the evolution of the rock and roll singer, the artist, from being this kind of naive and self-aware,
mm-hmm.
but artist,
right.
to entering this world of fame where things change. And your character, Alex Stanford, reprehensible and disgusting as he was right in the way he cast it for her.
Yeah.
And the way you cast it in saying that you change. It makes you a different person. I think it happens to anyone in our society, whether it's a writer or an artist or musician who becomes famous, it changes your life.
Sure.
It changes their lives in cutting them off from the ability to have random human contact.
And the stuff that gave them their material in the first place.
Right. So how do they recharge?
Exactly. It's a fascinating thing to watch. You know, writers are lucky. They're A, generally not that famous, and B, they tend to be older when they start having some success. So, whereas a rock singer might be 22 or 21
right.
and suddenly being told she's the queen of everything and suddenly spending all of her time going from point A to point B under managed events and forgetting that the way she used to write songs was sitting around in the living room or walking down by the river with a friend or whatever.
Right.
It's hard to figure how, you know, Mick Jagger at 60 whatever years old he is, living Mick Jagger's life, is able to write songs about dissatisfaction and and emotional angst.
But it's hard
not to feel that that the ones that he does produce, they somehow can't seem plausible. And yet, they're not about him. They're works of art that are supposed to live outside of that one man who lives in London in a mansion.
Well, what happens, I think, is the artist changes.
Mm-hmm.
You're no longer that person you were at 21.
Mm-hmm.
I think the true, and I guess this is maybe somewhat romantic to think, but the truly great artists are able to go through those stages, absorb them, and not be ruined by the trappings of fame and fortune.
Mm-hmm.
They can live that life, and they have to because that's what it is.
Right.
But they are capable of transcending it. To me, that makes a great, I mean, I think of my heroes of rock and roll would be, who have been able to do that, like Mick Jagger would be one, but Tom Waits is another, and Ray Davies, phenomenal. To be able to, incredible, constant reinvention.
Yep.
And, you know, they go through fallow periods. They go through times when, you know, maybe they're raising kids. They don't want a tour. They're hanging around, or maybe they try side projects. You know, you hear, but some of them are just amazing. Like Ryan Adams, I think, is mm-hmm. really, terrific at continuous invention,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what's going on.
I was a huge Kinks fan, but Tom Waits fascinates me particularly because here's a guy who, to do his job, he has to wake up and get somewhere on time and catch the flight and be at the gig and, you know, all the rest of that stuff. He's not a street person.
Right.
He's a serious businessman. And yet, you know, he certainly gives off the impression of having been just dragged onto stage.
Right.
And he gives this performance, this persona, which is very compelling and which people absorb and love, but which would be impractical in the universe that he actually lives in. So he's able to do something there that's highly artistic.
Well, he's become this persona.
Exactly.
I think the analog to him in writing is Charlie Bukowski.
For example.
Did exactly that. And even I knew pretty well Allen Ginsberg,
who
also was able to I mean, he actually may be one of the few writers of any 20th century, of all the writers you can think of, who went through a period of fame, you know, as a poet.
Yeah. I mean,
how many poets do that?
Yeah.
Became a cultural figure. And he didn't. I mean, you know, he lived that kind of weird life, too, of being part of a, you know, people making you into something else. And you have to somehow come to grips with that, absorb it,
mm-hmm.
work with it, make it, you know, it becomes your clay.
Yeah.
And I thought he was able to survive fame and remain a truly great poet. Pete Seeger has done. I mean, there mm-hmm. are lots of mm-hmm. people who have done it, but I think lots of them get chewed up and destroyed.
Exactly.
And you know, we worry about your character, Kate. At the very end, you mentioned that the she has a new guitarist, and I thought there's a sign there that something's happened.
Right.
You know, the world has shifted, and as it shifted for your character at the end, which, you know, I thought good redemption, I think, for him. I did, one other thing I just had to ask you about, you know, your language is very creative and without being self-conscious, but where did you come up with the word escargotically? That stuck out for me. It was a fantastic creation.
Thank you. That's one of those things that some people will think is funny and other people will find affected and very self-conscious and very irritating. So it's the test for all of those things is, does it amuse me? Would I want to read it? And the answer is yes, I would. I like stuff like that. So,
verbal pyrotechnics.
I like it.
Say.
I like the writers who use it. I like the ones who keep it in a certain balance. And that, you know, there's people will say, well, it's out of balance for me. It wasn't verbally impressive enough, or it was too verbally intrusive. It's a big spectrum.
Yeah.
And all I can say is, for me, this one works. And
Well, it's like listening to music. You don't know whether the note will hit right.
Exactly. And you can't spend any time thinking about it, really, because there are too many ears out there that hear things differently. So escargotically was sitting around one day and thinking, they're moving towards each other very slowly. They're kind of spiraling around each other, but extremely slowly, like, how about that?
Snails.
So,
very good.
A happy moment in my
life. It worked for me.
Excellent.
It may not work for everybody. And the other thing was, I didn't realize this until I read, I guess it must be the Random House promotional material, that you've embedded song titles in the book. Can you just talk about that a little bit? Was that where in the process of writing this did you come up with that idea?
I remember exactly what happened. I was writing a description of the bassist, and the sentence was, the bassist was ill again, or still ill. And I stopped because I happen to be a big fan of the Smiths, and Still Ill is a Smith song.
Right.
And I thought, oh, look at that, a Smith song. I wonder if I could do that again. And then,
did you do it on purpose? Did you have to work at it, or did they just sort of flow?
They tended to come. A lot of them came very easily. I have, you know, they're going through my mind. They're on, and sometimes, and there's one other one I'll mention because I remember thinking this is the place for this great phrase. She's looking at, Kate is looking at Julian's website where he's got a bunch of his TV commercials up, and she describes it as all that useless beauty.
Right.
Which is an Elvis Costello song.
Right.
And just a phrase that I've always found very melodious and beautiful.
Right. I don't think anybody, I can't remember anybody doing that before. I'm sure somebody must have.
I suppose.
But it's great because it does also show that you have this kind of fluid connection to the music. In other words, it really is part of your life.
Yeah.
It's your language, and so it's not artificial for you to do it. I mean, it's not a trick.
Right. And sometimes you're going to notice the title and you're going to hear it.
Right.
And you're going to be suddenly hearing music as you're reading the book, which is part of the idea.
So. Right. And it gives you, it connects me as a reader to you, the writer, because now you've signaled to me, here's something I want you to hear. It's almost like we do with, you know, when we got a playlist,
exactly.
You share your earbud, listen to this, and kind of makes the book multimedia without being self-consciously so. Because you hear it in your imagination, you don't have to, play. And you had talked about maybe, adding music to the audiobook. That's self-conscious, whereas what you've done is, in fact, the artful way of of doing that, which is to trigger my imagination to hear what you heard.
The pleasure of writing.
Yeah. Well, but it's unusual. And maybe you can only do it with this book because
probably,
you know, music is so yeah. much a part of the book. And how'd you feel about the cover? Does the cover, I mean, obviously you didn't choose it, the publisher
did.
Yeah,
I like it. It's a beautiful picture. It doesn't, it's not, there's no clear analog to who it is in the story. It isn't particularly
yeah, no, it didn't seem
anybody
that
from
way.
The story. It's just a great feeling.
Yeah.
It's a very plausible, related feeling to the story. So I like it. I hope it sticks
yeah.
around.
No, I think it's a pretty good cover. And I know, I think it's, you know, just for me, it's a terrific book. I really liked it a lot.
Thank you very much.
And, you know, I think the symbiotic relationship between the, I did want to mention that, you know, I like the symbiosis between the fan and the artist. That by making Kate actually respond to him, you took him out of being the stalker image.
Right.
You know, that, yeah, I mean, we all are as fans prone to silliness, self-involvement, self-projection. You know, you can do all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who go too far. But by making her involved with it, it, and I think some of the reviews or the descriptions of the books really don't give enough attention to that. It wasn't just a guy who is hopeless and lost attaching himself to a 20-year-old girl. It's the girl attaching herself to the complexity of the relationship with this guy in the audience. And that kind of opened up a whole other way of thinking about music,
mm-hmm.
because what is that person on stage doing? How are they relating to the audience? Are we part of their art? And of course, many times the songs that they write when they're on tour are about what they're doing.
Right.
They are about the fans. And it's not in a, it's just part of that because that's their language.
Mm-hmm.
That's their experience.
And what they have to do up there, you know, we're counting on them to be heartbroken whenever we need them to be. That's a lot to put on somebody every night at 8 p.m. Get
yeah.
up there and be heartbroken.
Well, and how can they get up there? I think of this a lot when I go hear music, to sing the same song. You
yeah.
know, you write this great song,
yeah.
as she does, and then Bleaker and Obleaker, and then you have to sing it every night.
Right.
Now, it had great meaning the first few times.
Sure.
And after that, it becomes, how do you get the emotion in? How does Billie Holiday
yep.
Get the emotion into a song she sung 50, 100, 200, 500 times?
Yeah.
I don't know either. And they, the great ones do,
yeah.
obviously. You know, Mick Jagger could do Satisfaction today, and it's going to be a knockout performance.
That's true.
I'm boggled by that. And especially, you know, in the literary world, I have met very few writers who had the ability to perform in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most writers don't get up on stage and read their work. But if you had to do it every night, I think it would kill you.
Absolutely.
And so I admire these guys.
Yeah.
And what you just said, you know, what you said about them is they have to get up there and do it for us. I don't begrudge them a penny. I don't begrudge them any of their suffering because that's really hard work.
I would think so. And if they don't do it convincingly enough, then they look artificial and,
right, and we laugh
showmen
at them.
And they're
right.
stupid. And if they
right.
do it convincingly enough, then what are they going through to be able to do that? What kind of person can get up there and give that over every night?
Pretty tough.
Very tough.
Well,
world.
Again, it's like the Broadway actors
yeah, yeah.
getting up every night and emoting.
Yep.
I give them a lot of credit.
That's
I think
the business.
That's,
yeah.
It's tough. So, listen, this was terrific. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you. Me too.
And good luck with this novel. The song is You. This has been Arthur Phillips talking to David Wilk for Writer's Cast. And take care.